our homeschool journey, I became aware that beauty and an appreciation for art in all its various forms was a really important aspect to our home education, especially because I had artistic children and I wanted to foster that in them. So years ago, I discovered Catholic Heritage curricula and was first introduced to their art appreciation resources for young children in their Art Masterpieces series, which was excellent and we used for a number of years. A desire for deeper understanding led us to the CHC program, Ever Ancient, Ever New. It's a program in two parts. Ever Ancient, Ever New guided us from ancient art forms chronologically to the art of the Renaissance. And then part two leads us from the art of the High Renaissance through the modern era. The first thing that drew me to the art appreciation that they offer is the history and the distinctly Catholic perspective. It was really beautiful. But the program also presents art theory and opportunities to practice with a companion art pad that goes along with the books. CHC materials are always steeped in beauty, and this program is really delightful. It helped us cultivate a sensitivity to beauty. And I think for the children that I used it with, it gave us all the foundation in the eras of art and characteristics that define them. The lives of artists, cultural influences, and the implications of those influences in art are explored in the context of each chapter. Ever Ancient, Ever New can be used independently by children in grades 5 and up, or read together as a family with much younger children. As something we valued in our family, this program makes art appreciation something that parents can share with their children without being overwhelmed by the idea of introducing art. It's beautiful, it's simple and engaging. A link to the program is in the show notes. Have a look and enjoy all of CHC's art programs. After a long, long break, my dear listeners, I have Elizabeth back with me. I've missed her so much, and it's just so awesome to be with you here. Elizabeth, how are you?
Good. It's great to be back and to see you and chat.
Yeah. Get life getting a little bit back to normal. That's good. And you're heading into another school year. So.
Yes. Yeah. My kids are so funny because my oldest hates school. But then the other day he was like, can we start? And I was like,
it's funny, my brain
is not ready.
Yeah, no, I need longer break.
right, like I've set the date in my mind. Don't rush me.
So what, you know, I don't know if you do grades in your household, but we didn't really ever do grades, but it was something I would think about at the beginning of the year so that if my kids got asked what grade they were in, I could say, oh, remember you're in grade 4.
Right.
So what's your rough age or grade that you're approaching this year?
It is definitely rough. So my oldest is, we'll just say doing a lot of sixth grade work. And then my 9-year-old will be doing fifth grade work. And then my 7-year-old, he just turned 7, will be doing first grade work. But that'll be interesting because he, I think I've talked about, seemed behind on a lot of things. So we had just some testing done, not because it matters, but just to see how we could better, you know, present material to him to help him. And so he's like borderline dyslexic and things. So I kind of just didn't do much with him last year. We did a little bit of the 100 easy lessons to reading and stuff and then paused for the summer. But he's actually quite talented with math. Like he understands numbers without very much instruction from us.
Cool.
And so I got him first grade math stuff, and now I'm thinking it's probably going to be too easy.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't want to just like throw him in. So we're still, so first grade, but.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Yeah. And Penelope is how old? 4?
She is 4.
Okay.
She's very good at drawing the letter P.
Nice. And babies, you know, at the hardest stage of all, right?
right, exactly.
Not really a baby anymore. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh, fun. So you're doing it all.
Yes.
That's awesome. So we had a question submitted that you were going to bring to me.
Yes.
And a couple of sort of add-on questions as well, because that was a really good question.
one that we should, we've probably addressed in the context of other episodes before, but.
Right. But it's always
of, as a standalone. Yeah.
Always relevant.
It's always relevant.
Okay. So I'll kind of just skim just to give a little background for you. But this mom is struggling with how to gentle parent without rewards, a 14-month-old who specifically struggles with the idea of getting into his car seat to go places. So what advice can you give for kind of how to encourage without bribing, you know, someone who's still so small and probably very independent sounding?
Yes. It sounds like as they are at that age. So I had, to some degree, I had answered this question to the listener in, you know, sort of short form before. And then I said, you know, I'd like to take this question on the show because I think lots of parents would probably appreciate it. And I think she was asking also that, you know, is it bribing to, if I give them something to hold, you know, is that bribing? And absolutely not. I mean, sometimes the outcome of handling something without carrot and stick looks almost exactly the same as it might look in a carrot and stick. It's the intent behind it that becomes the really sort of powerful indicator of whether or not something is sort of bribing. Because I used to take my kids and put a cracker in each hand or a gummy in each hand when they were that age and really thrashing and struggling with the car seat and just plunk them in. But it wasn't, I'm going to give you these when you cooperate and get in your seat. They weren't going to cooperate. That wasn't going to happen. They're going to thrash all the way to the bank. But at least with something in each of their hand, you know, I wasn't going to get caught in the crossfire and their hands are busy, so I can get them buckled really fast without worrying about, you know, the thrashing of hands and the arching of the back and, you know, all that stuff, that I could do it a little more effectively because their hands were busy. And so that comes in, you know, in the phrase that I've used over and over is the managing the environment, right? So what can I do with this child to get them in their car seat more easily? So if you're going to do the same thing, it would be, and that would be come under the sort of the carrot and stick umbrella, is something like, you're only going to get these if you're going to get in your car seat, or this is the treat you're going to get when you get in your car seat, and expecting them to cooperate. A 14-month-old, that might work with an older child. Still not recommended, in my opinion. But with a 14-month-old, they're probably not going to care anyway. So in a sense, better off to hand them a favorite toy or hand them a cracker in each hand and just plunk them in the car seat and buckle them up, knowing they're going to thrash and carry on, but at least their hands are busy.
Yeah. Well, and I think she said it was her first child, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think to other listeners, it is encouraging to know that the more kids you have in that car, the more easily that child is distracted and will get in that seat.
Yeah. And that's a really great point because, you know, what we noticed after, you know, three kids or whatever, however many kids we had, was that the kids that might have been difficult in some area when they were younger, like say sitting at the table, that, you know, they keep getting up and wandering away and, you know, dragging their food with them or whatever. A child only has a certain capacity to sit at the table. I wouldn't have unrealistic expectations about that. But the more kids I had, the longer a little one would sit at the table, right? And understand that that's what we do. And like with my first daughter, trying to get her to eat food, because one of the rules in our house was food has to be eaten at the table, right? I didn't like them wandering around with food because it just was too messy. So for me, some parents are totally okay with that. That's not, you know, that's not a right or wrong. It's just your own take on it as a parent. But so I would just, you know, bring them back to the table. And if they kept, you know, if they got up a couple of times with their food, then I would just put the food up and say, you know, when you're ready to sit at the table, we'll do this or whatever. That was just worked in our family. But with the more kids I had, the less that happened. They just, everybody's sitting at the table now. Oh, okay. I get it. I'll sit at the table. And it was just part of their sort of, proximate formation, that they were just looking around and observing that everybody else isn't jumping up from the table and carrying their food around the house. So this is what we do. And it's true for car seats as well, that, there's people in here to talk to me and people in here to distract me, but also everyone's just getting in their car seats. So, that's what we do in this family, right? We just get in their car seat.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I also am wondering, I have a 2-year-old and 14 months seems quite long time ago. but I wonder if the listener could also encourage, because the dexterity, the abilities of a 14-month-old are getting close to the point where they could maybe be interested at the idea of helping to buckle themselves. That might be something interesting, you know, if, can you help me do this?
And certainly if not now, even a couple of months from now, that would be worth trying, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because my 2-year-old, she doesn't really that often anymore, but she really wanted to help buckle for a while. And I just kind of let her help, and she was occupied with that idea. And she wanted a little bit too much of the independence without the proper strength to do so.
Yeah, it's great though. So however we can encourage them to do that, as long as we're not wheedling with them and, you know, dangling things in front of them, like, you know, emotionally dangling, if you do this, then you get this. There's just no problem with just doing whatever it takes to get the car seats.
If you don't mind segueing into furthering this topic with how do we get our kids to cooperate doing things that they don't want to do?
It bears pointing out that you can't actually force someone to do something, right? So, and I've used this analogy before. Say, for example, we want our child to do up their own shoes. And they're not doing their own shoes, and they're kicking up a big fuss about doing their shoes. And if we grab their hand and make them do up their Velcro or make them tie their bow or whatever it is we do, who's actually tying shoes, right? It's us tying shoes. There's a real downside to doing what we would say forcing them, because we can't actually stand there. We can threaten them. Okay. We can't actually stand there and make their fingers tie a bow or do up their Velcro without touching them, right? It takes actual physical force, and we are actually doing the thing then, not them. If our child we want them to cooperate, really in a sense, aiding them and supporting them in whatever it is they're finding difficult or whatever it is they're giving you sort of pushback about, that our support actually goes a lot further in them grabbing the thing and actually doing it for themselves. So if we're kind about it, and if we're sensitive about it, and we're supportive about it, we're going to have a lot less trouble in the future. The framework for the time frame for the problem is just shortened so much by us just saying, I'll give you a hand with that. I can do that. Or if they're kicking their shoes off and you have no way of getting their shoes back on them, before you unbuckle them at your destination, just put the shoes on before they can actually do that, right? So again, managing the environment. But if we help them and support them through their, you know, whatever it is that's challenging them, sometimes they just don't want to, sometimes it's challenging, more challenging than they want to do. They might have been perfectly capable of doing it last week, but maybe today they're having a bad day. So kind of saying, oh, but you know how to do that, or whatever, it's not actually that helpful. It's much more helpful to say, oh, you must be having a hard day, because I know you know how to do this, but I'll do it for you today. Right? That support weighs hugely. And again, the example of us as spouses, if something we find particularly challenging, make dinner every night or whatever, you know, but tonight I'm tired, I've got a headache, or the kids have been rangy all day or whatever, tonight dinner's hard. If our husband says, oh, come on, you make dinner every night, how hard can it be? We'd be so mad. But if he says, can I take over for tonight? Or do you need some help? Because I'm happy to help you. Or why don't you have a glass of wine and go sit down? Whatever. That kind of support just goes hugely further in us kind of getting over this challenge that we're currently experiencing. When they don't want to do a thing, we're really in a situation where our support is so much better than our criticism or our coming down on them or getting angry or whatever. You know, even if you don't feel like it, right? So the support means a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. We pray the rosary together as a family every night. And our 4-year-old very recently, well, she goes through phases. Lately, it's, I don't want to do this. We're only doing one decade, you know? And I just keep saying, you don't have to pray with us. You need to be in the room with us. You can look at books. We have like a Noah's Ark. We have certain toys to help facilitate the mindset of prayer. because you can't force a kid to pray, but the whole point is to be together as a family. And then tonight I told her, I said, look, when you're a mommy, you can say how many decades you're going to do, but we're doing all of them.
Yeah, that's a great line, you know, Elizabeth, because I was thinking about this when we were talking about the car seat, is that, you know, kind of, okay, this is what we do as a family. And we would say, oh yeah, that's what we do. This is how we do things. We're Landry's. That's what it was, my line to my kids. Yeah, we're Landry's. Or more importantly, we don't do this because we're Landry's, right? That's just not, yeah. We just don't do that here. And that would be the kind of thing. Well, of course we're going to say evening prayers. You know, that's what we do in our house. We're Landry's and that's what we do in our house. So they sort of identifying that this is a family thing that we do. And we can't expect them to sit still and, you know, pray for 20 minutes when they're little, but we can encourage it. And we're going to encourage it again a lot better by supporting them in that rather than fighting them over it. You know, like, you know, okay, you have to be on your knees, you know, with your hands folded. That's, of course, not going to work, right? But if we give them work with the wiggle, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, and just meeting them where they are at. Mm-hmm. Given like their ages. And like you said, maybe it's just a bad day or, you know, like they did it last week, but that doesn't mean this week, you know, like my 4-year-old is totally capable of praying every prayer in the rosary and she's led decades before, but 9 times out of 10, she is looking at a book that has nothing to do with the rosary or our Catholic faith.
Yeah, she'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. She'll get there for sure. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Should we address that question any deeper? Or is that, would there be examples at different ages that might be helpful? Nothing's coming to my mind right now, but you still have a whole host of children who are.
Right. I know. It's a good week.
There's
right
nothing. Now. That's great. You know, but getting kids to do things they don't want to do. No, was the question getting kids to do things we want them to do? They don't want to do. That they don't
want to do. The stuff that they don't want to do.
Yeah. So what would be another example, you know, what we sort of addressed?
Maybe a chore that they're expected to do every day or every week. And
older child, maybe, you know, like a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old or something like that. If they're sort of balking at doing something. But again, first of all, that, you know, Gordon Neufeld would say, to connect first or collect, you know, both those words are used. The idea that you sort of bring the child in before you ask something of them. And that can just be anything, you know, like, oh, you know, touch their shoulder, touch their, you know, ruffle their hair or whatever, say, oh, did you remember to do your chore? Or how are you doing? You've been having lots of fun outside or whatever, sort of developing a little bit of rapport and then say, do you remember your chore? Did you remember to do your chore today? You know, I could use a hand unloading the dishwasher. So, and again, if they're like, oh, you know, maybe they're having a bad day. It's like, oh no, mom, I can't. I don't want to do the dishwasher. Maybe they have a big hissy fit. Sometimes our best course of action is to say, okay, this sounds like it's going to be hard for you today. Right. Instead of sort of, you know, whatever writing them off or, you know, don't be ridiculous or whatever. This sounds like it's going to be hard. Why? What's hard about that today? Mm-hmm. I hate doing the dishwasher, blah, blah, blah. Okay, what's the hardest part of the dishwasher? Oh, I hate doing the cutlery. Okay, you know what? How about if I do the cutlery today and you do the rest? Right? It goes a long way in our relationship with them to say, I'm willing to help you. And a lot of times, especially with older kids, they'll say, oh, never mind, I'll do it. You know what I mean? But giving them that opportunity to feel supported and feel heard, right? Okay. So this is hard. Yeah. It's a pain in the neck. You'd rather go do something else. You'd probably were heading out to play or something, you know, make some kind of decision with them, like, so that they feel like they have some control over it. Like, okay, I was just heading out the door. I just want to go play. Okay. Why don't you go jump on the trampoline for about 15 minutes? I'll set a timer. And when you can't come back in, then the dishwasher then, right? It has to be done then though, because I'm getting dinner ready or whatever. So does that sound fair? Right? I use that line a lot with my kids. Does that sound fair? Does that sound like it help you over this bump? And usually they would say yes. Or they might bargain, could it be 20 minutes? You know? Well, sure. Yeah. Helping them I think it just really, really helps them to be heard.
I think I've been working on that a little bit more. Kind of not like consulting with my kids as if they're going to get me to change, you know, my mind on things, but just so that they can feel heard. We got the Switch for Christmas, the Nintendo Switch. And we did that in part because most of their friends had it. And so we didn't want our, you know, our, we live in a small city. They don't have a lot of opportunities to, you know, make new friends, so to speak. And all of them, even some of the like Catholic ones, use the Switch heavily. And so we wanted them to at least kind of be familiar, but we would only allow each kid like about 20 minutes and not even every day, 20 minutes each. Then I listened to the podcast, 1,000 Hours Outside. Have you heard of it? And they had an episode that talked about, because there's this idea that passive screen time is worse than the active, like where you're playing a video game or, you know, whatnot. Right. And the, I think she was a psychologist that was being interviewed on the show, was saying, actually, it's the other way around. And so the interactive sort of entertainment, kids have a harder time coming off of that dopamine fix than they would if they were to just sit and watch a movie as a family.
Yeah. I'll tell you something. That was certainly what I noticed. Cause when you said the first one, I thought, oh boy, that was not the way. Like if the kids had a little bit of computer time, they just wanted more and more and more. We had to really restrict it because they just wanted it so badly. So especially when they were young, you know, younger, like 10, 11, 12.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's rough. So like now we have this. So I was talking to my oldest about it and I said, it bothers you how much we're limiting you. Right. And he goes, yeah. And so I kind of tried to explain it to him at his level. And I said, I know that doesn't change how you feel, but I want you to know that our decisions aren't to be mean. It's because we care about you and we're not getting rid of it, but this week I've been kind of letting them play electronics more and watch movies more because when we start the school year, it's going to be even less. And let me tell you, my 4-year-old can't control her emotions. My boys can't control their emotions. Right. Like little things that normally wouldn't bother them so much, they're like freaking out over. And so I told my husband, this is why we restrict and limit. Not to I guess, belittle any parents that do things differently. This is just what I notice in my home with my kids.
Yeah. I'll tell you something that this is just an aside, but it just came to my mind because we had gone through a period where the kids, they were only allowed to have their computer time once a week. So like on a Saturday or a Thursday or whatever happened to work that you know, period of time. So they were allowed an hour once a week. And then we decided to sort of ease up on that and they could have like, basically they were still getting an hour and a half of computer time, but they were splitting it up. So they would having us like a half an hour, 3 times a week or something like that. And I think it happened because it was winter time and, you know, they would finish their school and then say, can I have some computer time? And so we started thinking, okay, well, maybe we could rethink how we're doing it. Is it going to be something you do, you know, at the end of the day or whatever, or is it going to be something that you do sort of once a week? So we tried that. It was way worse, way, way worse to have an hour and a half spread over 3 days than an hour and a half on one day because they just didn't think about it. If it was once a week, they didn't think about it. But if it was like every other day, that they couldn't get off their minds, right? It was like, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My kids would ask me, like they would wake up and almost immediately, can I have my 20 minutes on the Switch? And so at the start of the summer, I said, you are not to ask. We're not doing it. We're taking a break.
Yeah.
I will let you know when we're resuming, but you don't have to worry about it. And their imagination kicked back into gear. They were like digging holes in the backyard. They were, you know, like jumping on the trampoline, playing
it's
board
amazing
games. Like
what it does. It's amazing. Yeah. Okay. How are we doing? Is there another question spinoff?
Okay. So this one is a great one in my opinion, and I did not write it. So how do we prevent our kids from doing the things that we don't want them to do? So we're flipping
Flipping the question. Okay. So instead of trying to get them to do something, we're trying to prevent them from doing something. Okay. So let's have a couple of examples, maybe at different ages or stages where we want to prevent them from getting into an area of the house where we want to prevent them from making a big mess in an area that you don't want them playing in, or we want to prevent them from escaping and running out to the yard, or we want to prevent them from what are some other things that would sort of fall into that category?
Well, my mind goes to the things that I fear the most.
Prevent them from bolting away or...
No, things like preventing them from, I guess, discovering P-O-R-N for anybody whose kids might be listening.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where my mind goes.
Or like, so say maybe preventing them from going on the computer without permission or sneaking, sneaking things. Yeah, that's a really good one because that can be really damaging in relationships because we don't really know how to react or respond to it, right? So a lot of this, certainly with kids are young, is about preventing them from doing things, is really about managing the environment, right? Mm-hmm. It's just such an important piece of the puzzle. You know, I'll just give some really obvious ones, but like say, for example, you're folding laundry and you keep your laundry basket on the floor, a toddler comes along and they're just going to grab out your folded laundry, right? So fold your laundry up high somewhere. You know, don't leave it lying around where the toddler is going to get into it, because it would be an unrealistic expectation, because toddlers and, you know, really anybody under, you know, 5 or 6 years old is really impulse driven, that sometimes they might be doing it to, you know, kind of be naughty in a sense. They're trying to, you know, get your goat, but sometimes they're just doing it because that's kind of fun. And sometimes they're just doing it because they don't even realize it's not a thing to do. Learning how to manage the environment sometimes takes a couple of kids before we figure out like, oh yeah, why don't I fold the laundry on the kitchen counter, you know, or up on a table rather than having it on the floor in the living room because the toddler can't get it. Mm-hmm. We could sit and listen to an audiobook while I fold laundry or whatever. So that would be, you know, one example of managing the environment. Something like, I'm trying to think of, sir, what was the examples that we kind of threw out there? So, but say younger kids, what was a couple of the other things we threw out there? Like, you know, escaping the house, right? So one of my little grandsons is just, he's a physical wizard. He's just absolutely remarkable. He can get anywhere and do anything. He's just little and he is unstoppable, right? So if we have him here, we're at an advantage here because we have, you know, basically three adults to the kids. And so one of us just tails him everywhere he goes. But if we can't for some reason, or even just to prevent a meltdown, I just lock all the doors from the inside. If we're inside and I don't want to go out right at that moment, I lock all the inside doors because he can open the doorknobs, but he can't unlock them. Right. By the time he's big enough to unlock them, he'll be a much bigger, you know, older, more reasonable person. And so then, you know, that can be a discussion point. If we want to keep them on the patio, we're going to bungee cord the door shut, you know, or if there's cupboard doors or whatever, we're going to bungee cord those shut, right? So managing the environment and also keeping things that are unsafe, that this sort of unstoppable person that you don't want them to get into, I'll keep them in a higher cupboard or keep them somewhere safer. But say it was a matter of your yard, if they were going to bolt out of your yard, to make sure that you had, you know, bungee corded your gates shut or put things in place that are going to actually prevent them from doing that, like be one step ahead of them. That's really the trick here to managing an environment is, and sometimes you learn as you go. So they escape your yard one time and you're going to know, okay, we have to do something serious here. A friend of mine was she had one of these unstoppable kids, you know, he's an adult now and married with kids, but he was just one of these same personalities, just unstoppable. And when we met, he was three and she had all her dining room chairs tied to her table with ribbon, like big wide ribbon. It's a smart idea because he would push the chairs all around the house and get into everything he could around the house. And so she tied the chairs. They took anything that he could climb on, like his stools or anything like that. They just removed them. And then they tied all the dining room chairs to the dining room table so that he couldn't get into things. Because, you know, you have to run to the bathroom sometimes. Well, you don't want to be thinking that your child, every time you turn your back, is going to be into something. And again, if you needed to have a shower and you had a child like that and nobody to supervise, take the child in the bathroom with you, lock the door. We also use those like hook and eye type locks way up high. for indoor doors, because say, for example, there was a room like my own bedroom, we had a harp in our bedroom, and, you know, some of the things that were in our bedroom were put there so they were sort of toddler safe. We had a big tall hook and eye that was almost at the top of the door mm-hmm. that Albert and I could reach, but none of the kids could reach it, so that yeah. it wasn't accidentally left open, or the toddler that could get into things could open it. And those hooks and eyes, like, they're cheap, you know, it's like $2 to get a hook and eye to put in your door, or one of the, you know, like sort of bolt type things, whatever suits your door. But that makes a world of difference. And even if it's a room you just don't want them getting into and messing up, right? So prevent them from just trashing a room. Well, keep a hook and eye on it, because you just, for your own sanity, right? Kind of make your space really manageable.
It's so funny listening to your ideas. They're great ideas, but my oldest is so creative. None of that would work.
But even as a toddler, like, he wouldn't.
Oh, like the things that he could scale, like he would right. climb cabinets and get on counters, and like,
yeah,
there was no such thing as like hiding Christmas and birthday presents, because
right.
like my husband found like a really cool pocket knife
right.
he was going to give to my oldest for like Christmas or something. He put it on top of our kitchen cabinets, like where we keep like right. our turkey roasting pan.
Right.
Like, our son had no reason to be up there. And one right. day he was just up there and he was like, "What's this?"
No.
Yeah,
way.
Just stuff yeah. like that, you know, where yeah. you just like, we just joked that like, you can't hide anything from him. He's just.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, that comes down to a managing the environment. Like, maybe you're in a situation where you have to hide it in somebody else's garage, one of your neighbors, or, you know what I mean? One of your neighbors or your yeah. parents or whatever, somebody close by, that we need to keep a garbage bag full of Christmas presents at your
right.
house. Sometimes that actually becomes part of managing the environment, right? Is actually not having things there.
Yeah. But, you know, when you're not expecting to have to manage it in those ways until it happens, that's what's so crazy. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So then you had brought up the other point about sort of the doing things that you don't want them to do that might be sneaky, like, you know, going on the computer without permission, or getting into things that would be bad for them, sort of sneakiness in general. So how do we prevent sneakiness? Again, I think when you really work hard to develop a really open conversation with your child, and you work really hard to support that, they get that you are working hard to support them. Doing something would displease you would be hurtful, right? So they grow into that at 3 or 4 or 5. They're not necessarily going to understand that. But for us, if the kids were ever, when they were little, if they were ever doing something sneaky, I would verbalize that. Like, you know, I noticed that you were taking a cookie and you thought I wasn't looking, right? And I saw you doing that. So I'm just wondering, did you feel like you couldn't come and ask me? Like, in a supportive way, as opposed to an accusatory mm-hmm. way, right? Did you think I was going to get mad if you asked me? Or did you think I was going to say no? And they might say either of those things, and they might have just snuck it because they thought that was fun to do. And to be able to verbalize that is, you yeah. know, sweetie, that it's important to not be sneaky, right? Not do things behind my back, because I want to have a really good relationship with you. And so it's important to me that mm-hmm. you just ask me, right? And if for some reason I think you shouldn't have it, we can discuss that. But it's more important, you know, and also saying when you address it with them, like when you took that cookie or whatever, and they say, no, I didn't, to say, well, you know, I did see you do that. So don't let them continue the lie. But often, we found anyways, often, most of the time, the kids would say, I did. Don't get mad, because that's going to shut them down really fast for the next time. So if you get mad at them for doing something they shouldn't have done, especially a sneaky thing, it's going to lead to more sneakiness, mm-hmm. or it's going to lead to them not admitting that they did the thing, right? And even if we eyewitness them, some kids will absolutely, you know, stand by the you know, I didn't do that thing, right? You must have been mistaken or whatever. So the formation of that, I think, starts really young, that we need to, it's really important that we have this conversation. And you can come to me if you want to do something, even if I've said no 100 times before, let's discuss it rather than being sneaky, right? So, I mean, I think all of that will help a child to not sort of not be sneaky with the computer and things like that. However, if you have a child that you're concerned about, that's maybe his tendency is to be sneaky or tendency is to want to get on the computer without you realizing or whatever, then absolutely all the parental controls, that's an environmental management thing, right? All the parental controls that you can, they can't even get into that computer without knowing the password.
Right.
Even if you have to change it every couple of days, that's just what you do to manage that, right? But having an open conversation about it as well. I'm keeping this password on here because I don't want you on the computer. The computer is something that has to be supervised at your age. And we just can't have that problem. Also to have, if they're having their computer time or whatever, and they're allowed to be on the computer, that have it in a public place, right? Which can be a bit challenging when you have toddlers and whatnot and other kids, because they're going to stand around and want to watch. But better than them, you know, coming across something either accidentally or intentionally. I have the highest level of parental controls on that thing, or have it in a room that's locked or whatever, so that, you know, you build yourself a family firewall against the computer, right? And that's a vitally important thing to do. And you know, even when our kids got to be older, you know, young adults and doing, say, some of their high school work on their computer or whatever, door stays open, right? And, you know, I want to be able to walk in at any time and know, you know, and that sometimes you accidentally come across things and can lead you down a rabbit hole. We don't want to see that happen. That's just the way we need to operate. And, you know, when you start having your, maybe some computer time on your own, I want to be able to walk in so that I, you know, I trust you. I don't think you're going to pursue those things if something came along. And then also saying, you know, when kids get older, especially the boys, I mean, I know the girls can have issues with this too, but with the boys who are more inclined to be visually stimulated by what they see, that to be able to ask them every once in a while, you know, are you having any issues? Because, you know, have you come across things that we wouldn't approve of, or did, you know, were you tempted or whatever? But let's talk about that. Even if it's every week, it's just a really important conversation to be having with your, you know, teenage boys, right? Especially when they're having a bit of sort of privacy with their computer time, you know? Yeah. So hopefully those are helpful management tools. Yeah. Should we wrap it up there?
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, so nice to see you, and we'll see you in a week or two.
Yeah, okay. Sounds good. Thanks.
God bless.